listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. Just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch. On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, your radio psychologist, and you are on my couch. Welcome. As always, I'm here to answer questions you may have about some relationship problems or other issues you may need advice on. Also today, I'm talking to Dr. Kevin Jones, author of the controversial book, What Doctors Cannot Tell You. You're going to hear some enlightening, helpful, and somewhat scary stuff from Dr. Jones. I'm also going to open up the lines and answer your calls and emails on some of the latest news stories and folks in the news. Specifically, I'm going to tell you what I think is going on with accused shooter James Holmes. Right? Also, I'm going to help you out with why so many celebrities cheat on their partners. Is it an issue with celebrities in their mind and their narcissism? What is it? And of course, if you have a question for Dr. Jones or myself, you can call us live here on the air, 323-203-0815. Or if you're kind of shy, you don't want your voice on the air, you can email me at docmichelle@aol.com. That's two L's in my name, by the way, docmichelle@aol.com. We always welcome your calls. So he's here waiting to talk with you. It's Dr. Kevin Jones. He is the author of this book. It's very controversial, fascinating, good read, and I would recommend it for everyone because you learn a lot about what doctors cannot tell you. Clarity, confidence, and, here we go, uncertainty in medicine. Dr. Jones, by the way, is a bone cancer surgeon. He's also an assistant professor of orthopedic surgery, University of Utah, and he's here on the line. Well, good morning to you, Dr. Jones. How are you?
Good morning, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure, and what a great read. I really enjoyed this book. Very
good.
Very comfortable, very easy. You spoke people talk, not doctor talk.
That's the goal, yeah.
And very clear to understand. So I'm really curious, what motivated you to write this book? Because it is a bit controversial with some other doctors. I know that.
It is. You know, it's funny, as you start medical school, you have this impression that, wow, there is so much information to absorb. And although medical education is changing a little bit, it still is generally divided in half. The first half, you're in a classroom, and the second half, you're around patients. Mm. And the first half, you sort of sit there and you're absorbing all this stuff and you're studying hours and hours and hours and hours every day. And you think, again, there's so much information. How am I ever going to absorb it? And then day one of third year, you run into a fleshy patient. And suddenly all those neat and tidy little pathways and algorithms and lists that you memorized, they kind of fly out the window because suddenly here's this real patient and they don't apply all that neatly or tidily.
Yes.
And I think that's what really motivated me to write this book. I mean, I'm a young surgeon. I've been, you know, finished with my training and in practice for 4 years and a few days at this point. And essentially, as I got further and further into clinical medicine, I just realized, you know, there are so many things that we do not know. And the real challenge is not so much the things that are uncertain, but how we present them.
Yes.
And that it began to trouble me quite a bit. Because, you know, too often we present the things that we don't know as neat and tidy as my professors presented it to me in that first 2 years when we talked to patients. And it's not that neat and tidy. And I think that sometimes when we gloss over some of the fuzziness of it, then when patients you know, don't get the expected result, they're terribly disappointed, sometimes in themselves, often in their physicians, and often the problem is just that the medicine itself, you know, medicine with a capital M, was not that perfect to begin with.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. In your book, you make a point of saying that there aren't doctors like House or actor Hugh Laurie on the TV series. He's that lone genius, as you describe, with a repellent personality and a knack for plucking the right answer from the heavens. Don't you think that people want to see and believe in their doctors and kind of put them on a pedestal, Kevin?
Absolutely. I think pedestal is exactly the right word. You know, we often hear about, well, you know, my doctor has a God complex and he thinks he's God. But I think sometimes we want our physicians to be that, don't
yes,
we?
Absolutely.
You know, we want them to be able to pluck exactly the right answer.
Absolutely.
I have patients sometimes, you know, when I ask them, you know, how are you doing? They'll say, well, aren't you supposed to tell me? You're the doctor.
Exactly.
And I think that sometimes we have unrealistic expectations. And so certainly some of the thrust of this book is to help people to understand the types of things that we do not know and may never know.
Right.
But also to help them be empowered.
Right.
To invite their physician down from the pedestal. Because there are some physicians who love it up there.
Right.
There's no doubt.
No, it's true.
But there are many, I think, who would happily come down and have a real conversation with you if invited.
Sure. It's sort of a fine line in a way, because I know that as a physician, you must, when you find something that seems like a true diagnosis and you have a plan to work on that patient, you have to pretty much stick to that. Once you've done all the tests, once you've looked around and done so many things, you pretty much, and this it narrowed everything down. You have to say, okay, this is what I see, this is what I feel, let's go for it. And you have to have conviction and strength. And that is having faith in your doctor as well. On the other hand, you know, you have to have sort of a warm, fuzzy, good bedside manner in a way. But, I mean, it is kind of a fine line sometimes, because I think patients...
It is a very fine line.
Yeah.
And I think that the challenge is that we want to inspire hope.
Right.
You know,
we
want patients to have confidence in what they're doing. It is difficult to undertake some of the horrific things medicine needs to do to you to get you better without confidence that it's working. I mean, so there's no doubt that that really the emotional, psychological side of it comes into play heavily. I just think sometimes we are a little bit too quick to gloss over the fuzzier details.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge is not to not have confidence moving forward. You do have to make a decision. It's about judgment. I mean, you do make judgments in the midst of uncertainty, but the key is to keep the dialogue open.
Right.
So that then when things aren't working, you don't keep banging your head against the wall.
Yeah.
You go back and you tell your doctor, you know, are we sure this is working? Is there anything else we should rethink? Should we try something else?
Right.
And maybe that's going to be the situation where the physician's going to say, you know, no, I think we need more time to know. Let's keep doing this for a while. Or maybe they'll say, you know, yeah, we should have seen a benefit by now. Let's just try something else, you know?
Hmm. Yeah,
I think keeping that dialogue open is so, so critical.
Right. Well, Kevin, why don't doctors and patients communicate well? What's the reason?
I really think it's this pedestal, as you say. You know, I hear all the time patients will tell me after hearing about this book, they'll say, well, you know, I'm too afraid to ask my physician these types of questions. And I say, read the book, because if you're aware of the types of things that your physician at his or her best will not know, you'd be afraid not to ask questions.
Exactly.
I mean, really, if you appreciate the kinds of knowledge that medicine has and the kinds of knowledge that medicine cannot have, I think that you would realize that it necessitates a conversation. It has to be a dialogue.
Yeah.
Or there's going to be disappointment involved.
Sure. Sure. In case you just tuned in here, you are on the couch with Dr. Michelle and my special guest today, author Kevin B. Jones. He's a medical doctor, bone cancer surgeon, to be specific. And his book, it's called What Doctors Cannot Tell You, Clarity, Confidence, and Uncertainty in Medicine. And if you'd like to call in, feel free. If you have any questions for Dr. Jones, No, I don't want questions like, Doc, I got this pain in my back. No, we're not doing that, are we, today? We're not doing that. We're talking about the issues between doctors and patients and the communication and what questions you should ask your doctor. And, you know, some of the uneasy things that are not so comfortable to talk about sometimes, but what we need to ask. And also, in some way, you know, Kevin, this does allow patients to peek into the lives and the psyches of the doctors, because it's not easy. I wouldn't want your job. I'm sorry.
Well, it's not easy, but it's not easy being a patient either.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, well.
And I think that it is a, you know, in terms of the study of relationships, as I know this is your field.
Right.
I mean, talk about a wacky and wild relationship between physicians
right.
and patients.
It has
a kind of a nasty history, but even though it's much better than it used to be, it still has all sorts of tangles to get around.
Right. And I think you're correct in saying that a lot of people don't want to push their doctor or be, you know, too offending, because they really want to show respect and all that. But what are some of the most important questions that patients should ask their doctors first?
So I think, you know, in all the questions that I have in the book at the end of each chapter, I think all of them are ultimately getting at the central question of, what are you thinking? You know,
right.
A patient should be asking, how did you arrive at this decision? Not to understand every detail of their 8 years of school or whatever,
right.
but to understand, you know, explain it to me on my level, how we arrived at this point. Because here's what I think many people don't appreciate. When you go to a physician,
right.
you sit there in the office and you are usually given one diagnosis
yeah.
and one plan.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge is that physician has considered a list of possible diagnoses along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And even after arriving at one diagnosis, he or she's considered a list of possible treatments. And the key is, help me understand how you got from this list to the one. Because I think if that little bit of a discussion, it doesn't take a long time,
mm-hmm.
but that little bit of a dialogue, that little bit of a conversation helps you open the door, so that then if things aren't going as they're supposed to, you'll come back and you'll say, you know, you talked to me about these possibilities. We've tried this for 6 weeks and we're not getting anywhere. Is it possible, you know, we need to go back and rethink one of those other diagnoses? Not that you're telling the physician, you know, what your diagnosis is and exactly what you want done.
Right.
But you're saying, help me understand the way you thought about this.
Uh-huh. And most doctors would not take this as a personal assault against their expertise?
I really don't think they will. Obviously, there are a few who will, you know,
yeah.
but there are not many. You know, I think even most physicians, you know, who have read this book have said, yeah, I could
right.
totally be fine with that. It all depends on the tone. You know, I think the tone is really important. As with any conversation or relationships,
sure.
you know, tone matters.
Sure.
And I think the tone is important. And I think that there are patients occasionally who will come into a physician and will say, this is what I have and this is what I want you to do. That can be very offensive. You know,
sure.
you want to sort of say, come on, I've gone to school for how long and you're telling me exactly what you have when you might be right or you might be wrong. Let's talk for a minute.
Exactly.
But I think a very different tone is, you know, this is what I'm worried about. And can you help me understand this? That's very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the respect thing is huge. You brought this up a few minutes ago, but we want to respect our physicians, and that's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But think about the difference between a physician and a teacher.
Right.
And when we respect a teacher, we certainly, you know, we don't speak out of turn. We're not rude. We're not, you know, pert.
Right.
But we will ask questions. We'll say, help me understand this.
Right.
Because if we're a good student, then we're going to be asking questions to our good teacher whom we respect.
Right.
And I think the key with a good relationship between a physician and a patient is to change it from a physician standing between the patient and medicine, between, you know, the patient and his wares behind him,
right.
almost shielding them from view,
sure.
and instead standing next to the patient saying, okay, here are the places that we're pretty good. Here are the places where we've got some holes. And this, in your case, this is what I'm worried about. This is what I'm more confident of. It's all about the tone. And if you can change that tone to where we are working together to get the patient better, I think patients and physicians come out happier in the end.
Boy, does that make sense. In case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle and my special guest today, Dr. Kevin Jones. He's a medical doctor. He's a bone cancer surgeon, to be exact. He's also an assistant professor of orthopedic surgery at the University of Utah and author of his latest book, What Doctors Cannot Tell You, Clarity, Confidence, and Uncertainty in Medicine. And we're talking about how you can have a better relationship with your doctor and feel more confident in him or her. And, you know, also just at the same time, not be too intimidated to ask them questions. You know, I've heard a lot of my patients express fears that their medical doctors usually give them what they want to hear rather than what they need to hear. Is that true in most cases?
It is way too often true. And it's always in levels of degree. You know, I don't think that most physicians are out there trying to lie to their patients. I think that you'd be hard pressed to find a profession that is more full of really well-intentioned people who are usually at it for the right reasons. I certainly have no intent with this book to go out and slam the medical field. I think there are a lot of good physicians trying to do the right thing.
Right.
But it is extremely tempting if you're a physician.
Yes.
Just to kind of gloss over the things that are less certain.
Yes.
And that is even, it is even more tempting to gloss over the things you don't know.
Correct.
Than to gloss over the really bad things that can happen. I mean, we all are sort of into disclosing the really bad complications that can happen.
Right.
But those are more comfortable, actually, to tell a patient than to tell a patient, okay, this is the part we just don't know.
Right.
And we're making our best guess here, but this is what we don't know. And yet I think that physicians think about that uncertainty, talk about it, that uncertainty with their colleagues all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think asking them as a patient saying, look, I'm okay with your telling me what we don't know.
Right.
I think inviting them down from that pedestal can be a very rewarding thing in the end.
That's great advice, Dr. Jones. By the way, I'm talking to the author of the book, What Doctors Cannot Tell You. And I invite you to call here live on the air if you would wish to do so. It's 323-203-0815 if you have any questions for Dr. Jones. I think we have a caller on the line. Let's see if I can pull this person up without losing you. Let's see if we can do this. Hi, you're on the air with Dr. Jones. This is Michelle Cohen. Who's this?
Hey, Dr. Michelle. This is Jake.
Hi, Jake. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm an avid listener of On the Couch.
Great.
I love the show. I listen every Friday at 11.
Super.
And I just wanted to say, Dr. Jones, you sound, I've listened to the whole show so far, the whole 20 minutes, and I do have to say that you sound like an amazing, amazing physician. You sound like one of the most down-to-earth physicians I've ever spoken with in my life. And my question for you is, let's see. Recently, I had I took a fall. I took a spill, and I was in the most pain I've ever been in my entire life. So I went to my physician, who this was actually the first time that I had met with this specific physician, because the one that I usually go to, it was his day off, I guess, or he was out of the office, and it was urgent that I went in to the doctor. But what I found through my experience was that he was kind of like, you know, I showed him the wounds and whatever, and it was very quick. It was quick, like, get to the point, go, okay, get out, you know, here's your prescription, get out of the office. You know, it was very like, I walked in and, you know, the doctor came in, and he was a very nice gentleman, wonderful gentleman, but it just was so, it was so synthetic. It was so like, you know, I sat down, you know, he touch my legs with the little dial thing that makes them twitch. And then, you know, I showed him my wounds, and he goes, how bad does it hurt? I said, really bad. He's like, okay, I'll write you this prescription, you know, and then put this cream on your scars. And then literally, I think I talked to him for 5 minutes, and I was out of the office with a prescription.
Okay.
And I just guess, I don't know, I guess what I'm saying is, how do you become more personal with that?
It's a really tough thing. You know, time is, if there's any complaint I hear from physicians as they read this book, that's exactly what they come back to. How do I possibly have time to do what you're asking me to do? And it's true that the, you know, physicians are under a time crunch to some extent. I think that to some extent, the time crunch that physicians feel is self-created. Okay?
Okay.
I mean, they have the same 24 hours in a day that everyone else has. And everyone says, well, you know, I have certain quotas I have to meet. Well, that's because of reimbursement and payment and things like that. You know, it is
right.
A somewhat self-created time crunch. But I think the real key is that it doesn't take that much more time to change the character of the conversation. So in your case, where you were, where what you needed was maybe some pain medicine and a you know, some antibiotic salve or something to put on these wounds, you know, all you needed to do was say, okay, you know, what should I watch for? And should I call you back if this isn't working? Or, you know, are there other options that you've thought about? And it can be one of those questions, not even all three of them. And the whole idea is, you know, not to take an extra 25 minutes of his time, but simply to say, okay, just level with me for just a moment. Level with me and say how you're thinking about this. And that's what I would hope can change, because you and I are not going to change the time crunch that physicians either create or feel, you know, for themselves.
But
when we are with a physician, we can ask a question.
Yeah.
And ask a question that is the type of question that just says, level with me. You know, I am not here for a one-stop shop trying to get in and out as fast as I can.
Right.
Just level with me for a minute.
Yep.
And I think that's the key.
Good answer.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. John. I mean, that's that's perfect. You hit it right on the head. And I think I think another part of that is, I totally agree with you how you said, instead of having that barrier between, the physician and, you know, the medicine and then the patient, instead of creating a barrier, you know, stand next to the patient, you know, be the patient's teacher, walk with them for 5 minutes, you know, and say, okay, well, this is what we're going through. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you, Doc.
Jake,
you're the man.
Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call and hope Dr. Jones helped you out there.
Thank you, Jake.
Thank you very much, Doc. You guys have a great day.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Feel better. You like the way I said that? Feel better.
That's the idea.
What is it, Dr. Jones, that doctors cannot tell their patients?
You know, it's really interesting, because with the title of this book, obviously it often, you know, harkens to all these ads you see with doctors don't tell you. And but there are things that doctors cannot tell you. And essentially what doctors cannot tell you are the things that they don't know.
Okay.
You know, I can't tell you what I don't know.
Right.
I can tell you when I don't know. And that, I think, is such a critical distinction. That there are elements of knowledge that don't exist. And so when we make them up, it's just not honest.
Right.
But I can tell you when we reach those elements of knowledge. You know, even the things in medicine that we know the best,
mm-hmm.
things that we have, you know, subjected to large randomized controlled trials, and we say, you know, we are confident that such and such is an effective treatment. We know that on a population basis.
Mm-hmm.
We know that, meaning we've compared population A to population B and found out that population B statistically did better.
Right.
But still, in population B, there is a range of outcomes, and those are going to overlap heavily with population A.
Right.
And I think that is the real, you know, catch in medicine, right, is that the things that we know the best, we don't know in a way that I think most patients think we know. You know, right, we know in a way of populations and statistics.
Sure.
And these things that are sometimes difficult to explain, but for sure still include a range of possible outcomes.
Right.
And that's the tough part, is we can't tell you where you're going to be in that range.
Right.
We can tell you that we think this is the right thing to do, and we think it's the right thing to do because of a study or
right,
because of this population, you know, assessment or something.
Right.
But we still don't know exactly how it's going to be for you.
Right.
And that's the part we can't tell you even when we know our best.
Mm.
And so that's why I think really having a little bit of a conversation helps that feel a whole lot better.
Yes, sure does. In case you just tuned in here, you are on the couch with Dr. Michelle and my special guest today, Dr. Kevin Jones. He is the author of the book, What Doctors Cannot Tell You, Clarity, Confidence, and Uncertainty in Medicine. Dr. Jones is a bone cancer surgeon, assistant professor of orthopedic surgery at the University of Utah, and a wonderful author, I may say. I wanted to get a little personal with you here and ask you, what are some of the most difficult conversations you've had with your patients?
Yeah, you know, Michelle, people ask me all the time as a cancer specialist, and as a cancer specialist with bone cancer, I look after a lot of young people. Teenagers
sure,
are the most common patients with cancer of the bone,
right,
that starts in the bone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people always say, you know, how can you do your job? It must be so difficult to tell a family or, you know, a young person that they have cancer. But those are actually not the most difficult conversations that I have.
Really?
The most difficult conversations I have are the conversations before that. Because, you know, when I tell someone, you have cancer, I also include in that same conversation an action list. You know,
yes,
they have appointments, they have scans, they have all these things scheduled.
Right.
They have plans for chemotherapy or radiation or surgery or something.
Yes.
There is a plan that is very concrete that they can kind of hang their teeth on.
Right.
The most difficult conversations are the first conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So different than a lot of other parts of cancer surgery, most patients, when they come to me, do not yet have a diagnosis of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Because bone cancers and muscle cancers, the types of cancer I treat, are so rare, they're usually not diagnosed by their primary care physician or
right,
or even a general orthopedic surgeon. They're usually sent to me, and we assess them, and then, you know, sometimes with a biopsy, sometimes with imaging, in various ways, we make a diagnosis.
Sure.
But sometimes that first visit ends before we have a diagnosis. We're going to order some tests. So we're going to schedule a biopsy.
Mm-hmm.
And those conversations where we have had a whole episode of talking to each other where we don't yet have answers, those are by far the most difficult conversations I have because I can't give them anything concrete yet.
Right.
And you know what I find in myself is it is really tempting for me as a physician
mm-hmm,
to tell the patient, you know, this is what I think you have. That is so tempting to say.
Right.
And there are times when I can do it to some extent. You know, I can say, I'm sure you don't have this kind of thing or that kind of thing, but we're still working in this range. There are some things I can tell them.
Sure.
But I find it so interesting how tempted I am to want to say, you know, you're going to be okay. And I can't always.
No.
And that I think, that same temptation is there in much lower stakes situations in medicine as well.
And I'm sure you've heard so many times, especially with the particular population you're dealing with, patients say, Dr. Jones, am I going to be okay? What's the prognosis? And sometimes you don't know, right?
You just don't know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, in those times, there are conversations we can have
yeah,
at that point. And I think that it's so critical to have those conversations. I think what we can't have is we can't have really clear, bullet-pointed, you know, come with this is the deal and this is what the, you know,
yeah,
prognosis is. And I think that the more we have a conversation and the less we have sort of dogmatic bullet points,
right,
the better.
Right. Wow. So many of my clients come in to see me and they say, I think I have cancer. I've been going online for 10 hours and I've been looking up all my symptoms and this is what I've come to realize, that I think I'm dying, you know. And I say, wait a minute, well, hold on. It's not a good thing to go online, is it, Dr. Jones?
Well, it's interesting. So, you know, a lot of people have asked me about this, Dr. Google, you know?
Yeah, right.
What do you do about Dr. Google?
Right.
And I think this goes back to our conversation earlier. It's all about the tone.
Right.
You know, if you are a patient and you are having a symptom, I think there is nothing wrong with learning about things on the internet.
Right.
I do think that with some things, you might be wise to speak with your physician first before going to the internet. Certainly some of the diseases I treat,
sure,
there is a range of how bad they can be, and if they just look up the name on the internet, they're going to freak out.
Yes.
And it may be that they have a very mild range in that disease.
Right.
But I think it comes down to tone. If you go on the internet and you look up what you have and you think you have, and you go and tell your doctor, I have this and I want you to do this,
right,
that will not go well.
Yeah.
The conversation will just not go well.
Yeah.
If, on the other hand, you have a conversation with your physician and you say, you know, I looked this up and I found this article or this snippet of information on the internet, what do you think about that? I think that can be a very helpful conversation. The challenge on the internet, mm-hmm, is that so much of the information that is there is really an advertisement. It is,
yeah,
it is not necessarily, you know, objective, clear information. Often,
yeah,
it's an advertisement from,
sure,
you know, so it has a huge bias behind it.
Right.
And if you happen to have run into one of those things and you print out and you take it to your physician and in a very sort of humble conversational way, you say, you know, what do you think about this?
Right.
Your physician, hopefully, if they can do anything, they can sort information. Even if they haven't seen it before, they're likely to be able to say, okay, look, you know, this is an interesting article and let me read this and get back to you. Or it may be, you know, this is clearly an advertisement from this group, and you can see their bias right from the beginning. Or maybe, you know, I haven't thought of that. You know, that is a reasonable thing to think about in your care. Let's talk about that.
Sure.
I think if you're using information from the internet,
right,
to, you know, incite a conversation, it's good.
Yeah.
If you're using information from the internet to replace your doctor, and then you're telling your doctor to sort of, you know, be McDonald's and tell you, you know, give you exactly what you order.
That's right.
It's not going to go well.
It's
not going to go well.
No. And I think a lot of doctors resent that. I mean, they're
yes,
they're the expert. Trust them. You know.
They do, but yeah, I don't think physicians resent when patients bring them information. Say, what do you
right,
think about this?
Exactly.
That's a very different tone.
Aha. Uh-huh. And I'm having symptoms X, Y, Z, and do you think it's related to B or you
yeah,
know, whatever?
Yeah. Could it be related to this? I've read about this, and again, I think that can be that, you know, conversation starting question.
Right. Right. My guest today is Dr. Kevin Jones. He is a bone surgeon who specifically deals with cancer. He's also the author of the book What Doctors Cannot Tell You. It's a controversial book. Because he's sharing a lot of information, do you think you're sharing a lot of secrets here, Dr. Jones? Doctors cannot really tell you, but nonetheless, people need to know.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There is such a shroud over medicine.
Right.
And we talk so much in these days about disclosure. You know, we want our politicians, we want businessmen, we want
yeah,
everyone to disclose. Mm-hmm. And even in medicine, we talk about disclosing conflicts of interest and, you know, do they work for a company, this or that. But the one thing that is never going to be disclosed, at least that I can imagine,
right,
is the physician-patient relationship. Those conversations are so powerfully protected by law and ethics and everything else,
yeah,
that we never talk about those.
Sure.
And so in the midst of that, we've kept this shroud over it where we don't ever look into it. We don't ever question,
right,
you know, how the conversation is different between a physician and a patient,
mm-hmm,
than it is between a physician and a physician. And it is not just because of doctor speak or sort of the, you know, the terrible language skills that we learn in medicine.
Yeah.
It's also we talk about different kinds of things. And my hope is that this book will empower people to ask questions, to encourage their physician down from the pedestal, so they can have a real conversation, so that they can see what's behind the scenes.
Right.
They can see what their personal physician is actually thinking about.
Yes. That's exactly what it's about. And may I be a little self-indulgent here?
Sure.
You know, many of my patients are referred to me by doctors, such as yourself, to help them cope with pain and also the anxiety associated with it. And in my practice, you know, I use relaxation and imagery and updated autogenic therapy, things like that. What do you think is the relationship between the mind and the body?
Oh, I think it's huge.
Yeah.
But what's so interesting is I think that medicine as a scientific field knows nothing about it. And that's the problem. And so, you know, I think that so often we expect medicine to have a quick fix for us. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, medicine went from kind of being, you know, priests back in the Middle Ages to these days, you know, we want it to be like Jiffy Lube, you know, where you kind of go in and get your quick fix and that's it.
Right. Yeah.
And there are things like pain is one of the big ones
where
medicine's, you know, pat answers aren't that pat.
Right.
And you know, I mean, we've had this whole push in the last decade, you know, calling pain the fifth vital sign.
Right.
And you need to be treating it with all this pain. And what we've mostly accomplished, we've accomplished a bunch of highway accidents from people taking too many narcotics.
Right. Right.
There are sometimes that there are many aspects of pain that have probably nothing to do with anything that a doctor can fix with a quick medication.
Right.
Maybe it's a conversation. Maybe it's spending some time. Maybe it's learning how to relax. Maybe it's learning to exercise. Maybe it's having someone to talk to, which you may provide so much better than a physician. You know, but there are aspects of these things that we just don't know yet. The defect is in medicine with a capital M.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that your physician is a lousy physician, not practicing the standard of care, something like that. It's that medicine with a capital M doesn't have an answer for every source of pain.
Right.
And in that absence, we can try to do things. We can throw things at it that sometimes cause other problems.
Right.
Or we can simply take a step back and say, okay, this is an area where maybe I don't have the best answer for you.
Yeah.
And maybe someone else will be able to talk you through a better answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so kudos to those physicians for actually making that referral.
Right.
You know, instead of just drugging them down.
Exactly. I agree with you. Of course, it's all over the news. You know, it's very popular to say stress causes cancer, right? Stress causes all of our diseases, heart problem. Well, in a way, I guess it exacerbates the problem because our ability to manage the immune system lowers. Stress does cause a lot of problems. And, of course, worrisome thoughts makes it worse, that kind of thing.
But you know what? Even if stress doesn't cause cancer.
Yeah.
If you're wicked stressed and you have cancer, it's going to be harder for you.
Yes.
You know, even
well
if
said.
It isn't the cause of the actual cancer, it's still going to make it more difficult for you to get through the cancer.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the sort of the mind body, however you want to, you know, use the terms to describe it,
mm-hmm.
are how we're thinking about things, how we're feeling about things matters immensely in our health.
Right.
Because it's going to decide what kind of pluck we have to get through it,
right?
If nothing else.
Exactly.
And probably it has other impacts we just don't understand fully yet.
Yes. Well, listen, this is such a great book, and it was very helpful to me, and I know it will be great for listeners as well who have questions about what doctors can't tell you and what they should ask and how to be a little more assertive in their self-care and try to see doctors not as super beings, which you guys are, but, you know, try to, you know, take them down a bit at the pedestal and look at them as beings and people who are experts but are going to be straight with you about things. Where can people pick up your book, Dr. Jones?
So the book is available at Amazon and is available on barnesandnoble.com.
Mm-hmm.
My website for the book is www.doctorscannottellyou.com. Mm-hmm. And there are links to the Amazon and Barnes & Noble sites there. There's a bit more information about it. You can read some excerpts from the book there on the website and hear some reviews of it and all that.
Right.
But, yeah, the website, www.doctorscannottellyou.com, is probably the best starting place.
Right, exactly. And we talked briefly about some of the questions. You know, what should you ask your doctor? And there are so many great questions in here and suggestions for you listeners. You know, you can really help yourself to learn. And also, it's the tone in which you use to express yourself with your doctors as well. That's really important. You know, that really is. You know, don't come off defensive. Of course, a lot of people are scared, Dr. Jones, right? But try to think about the tone that you're using when you're talking with your doctor. And, you know, they know you're vulnerable. They know you're scared. You know, we're all worried about the, oh my God, you know. But you use a respective tone and understand that doctors are just human too. They're just a lot smarter than us all.
Well, maybe smarter in one specific field.
There you go. All right. And, of course, this show will be up on the webpage here on LA Talk Radio tomorrow. So if you missed any of my interview here with Dr. Kevin Jones, you can listen to it again and get more information. And, of course, pick up the book. I'll have all that information in the archives. Dr. Jones, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on the air with me.
Thanks so much, Michelle. It was
great
a pleasure.
Great book. Great book. I understand you have a surgery next. You have to go to surgery.
I do. I have a pretty big cancer surgery. I'm hoping to finish before 12:30 when the local burger joint closes.
There you go. All right. Well, bless you for being such a good guy. Thank you so much for helping others as well.
Thanks. Take care, Michelle.
You too now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, I'll give you more information on how to get the book as it will be up on the internet tomorrow here on LA Talk Radio's webpage, and that'll be great. What I'd like to do is take some time out here and answer some of your questions, as I always do, about the news events going on, newsmakers, entertainment people, all that. I've received several emails asking me whether I think James Holmes is crazy. Of course, he's accused of killing 12 people and injuring 58 others in that July 20th shooting rampage at the midnight showing of the new Batman film in Aurora, Colorado. And several listeners have also written to me saying that they're afraid that he's going to get off on a mental illness plea. I don't know if you were checking out the news yesterday. Chris Townsend, he's one of the survivors of the shooting, said, I don't care how mentally damaged he is, it doesn't give him the right to do what he did. Of course I agree. And by your responses to the majority of what I hear, you do too. So to answer your questions, yes, of course I think James Holmes is crazy. But he's a smart psychopath, as many of them are. He had the wherewithal to plan a shooting spree down to the last detail, including his assault gear, complete with gas mask, as well as take time to booby trap his apartment with bombs and, of course, dye his hair orange. And actually ask one of his jailers after being arrested, how did the Batman movie end? And all the while he blended in and behaved like he was somewhat normal in society, although he did have a relationship with a psychiatrist. I think he's an obsessed psychotic. And I don't think he has any conscience. I think he wanted to identify with the bad guy and be part of the glory and associated with a hit movie. This is his claim to fame. This is his moment. I've worked with a lot of patients who've been in prison for killing and abducting or torturing people. At the majority of the time, their diagnosis was schizophrenia or bipolar 1 with psychosis. So in many cases, I know that they had a voice in their heads tell them to target somebody because that someone was evil or the devil or that person was going to destroy the world. So they had to save the world by knocking that person off. Scary stuff. Scary stuff. Experts say the case is going to be dominated by arguments over the defendant's sanity. You think? Holmes' public defenders, I know they're going to try and argue that he's not mentally competent to stand trial, and they should. What concerns me is they may even try to find psychiatrists who are expert witnesses claiming that Holmes has multiple personality disorder. That's an old one. In other words, the real James Holmes didn't know what the other personality who kills people was doing. Right? And therefore not guilty. A court document, of course, previously revealed that Holmes was seeing the psychiatrist for unknown reasons. We'll find out why in the trial. And that's my comment on that. Yes, he's psychotic. He's crazy. He's a sociopath. And he's a smart one. Just because you're in a PhD program doesn't mean that you're mentally healthy. All right. I also got an email from Caitlin in Las Vegas asking me what I think of Kristen Stewart getting busted for stepping out on Robert Pattinson with married director Rupert Sanders. I don't usually do a lot of entertainment, but I was pretty surprised that they both immediately admitted their indiscretions. And they actually apologized in public for their actions. I think it's always great to apologize to your fans, showing that you are vulnerable. And hopefully their partners will work it out with them. But this goes on all the time. So many things we don't hear about. And it has for eons. And what else that's interesting, Caitlin, is that we're finding out that women are becoming just as guilty of cheating as men are now. What is it? More promiscuity? Yep. Less conscience? Yep. The internet? Oh, yeah. The social circles people run in? Absolutely. Anyway, that's what I think. Also, Zach from San Diego wrote, I'm so disappointed in my idol Leanne Rimes for having an affair with Eddie.
Oh, God.
Well, she and he were both married to other people. And Zach writes, what is it with cheating celebrities anyway? Well, you know, Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt supposedly fell in love on the set of, what was it, Mr. and Mrs. Smith? Well, he was still married to Jennifer Aniston. Angelina also allegedly broke up Billy Bob Thornton's engagement to Laura Dern. I don't know. Is it boredom in a relationship because celebrities need more and more thrills to fulfill their egos? To continue to fill up the ongoing emptiness inside? And in some way they need to be loved by so many and given accolades for their performances? Because in some way it validates who they are inside. Is this the stereotype about actors not ever being satisfied and that they always need to be loved and more? You love me. You actually love me. I think to some extent that is true. Are men like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Tiger Woods and Jesse James and Kris Jenner on and on? Are they just normal, good-looking guys who can't resist a lot of hot women throwing themselves at them because they're famous? Yeah. Are they dogs? Are they normal guys? Doing what men do? I wouldn't stereotype and say, yeah, they're doing what guys do. That's what guys do. If exposed to it all the time, it's very hard to resist temptation. But there is a thing called conscience and loyalty. And that's the thing that I strive to help people with. Although it's thrown at you in your face and it's always there, you're going to get busted. Especially if you're in the public eye. So I thank you for emailing me. And this is Dr. Michelle. You are on the couch. And you can stay if you'd like. I've got more great shows coming up. Thank you so much for listening today, for your emails, for your calls, and also for my special guest, Dr. Kevin Jones, the author of What Doctors Cannot Tell You. I'll have all that information up for you to replay the show tomorrow if you'd like. If you missed anything, it's a great interview. Have a good one, and as I always say, be good and take care of yourself. Because then you'll be better for other people, and that's the way it works. Talk to you next Friday. Bye-bye.